Thanks for listening to this podcast of Trending with Timory. If you haven't already subscribed, please catch us wherever you love to listen to your podcast, from the Relevant Radio app to Apple, YouTube, you name it, we are there. And if you listen on Apple Podcasts, please be sure to go and give us a 5-star review to help other people discover the podcast. Anything you share in terms of episodes, whether it's texting it to a friend, posting on social media, helps to build up the kingdom for God, to help confront the challenging issues we face as a culture, but with joy, with hope, and with an eternal perspective where our faith collides with everyday life, bringing eternal principles to help us live our life joyfully.
So, what's trending? Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio.
It's our weekly marriage hour today on Trending. If you have a question, I would be happy to take it. The number's 1-888-914-9149. So please reach out if you have a question. We would love to hear from you. You can always ask live during the show on Instagram. Just follow me at Timory. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. Okay, so much has happened, and or should I say is happening, this week, everything from the State of the Union address by President Biden to, did you hear that he was actually approached by a Catholic reporter from EWTN asking about his stance on abortion, and his comments should not be acceptable in any way by a president in general. It is a stupid argument having to do with theology, and we're actually going to come to that in just a little bit. So to hear what President Biden's remarks were, as well as a simple response, if anyone ever gives you even the same argument, we will equip you to respond. Also, I touched a little bit with some of my thoughts on what's happening in Ukraine. We talked a little bit about how one of the most commonly searched terms on Google right now is a draft. How old would you be if you were to be drafted today? We talked about that yesterday on Trending, but today I want to talk about why we are seeing what's happening in Ukraine and Russia right now. It actually has to do, believe it or not, with abortion, contraception, as well as the view of the human person that has continued to ensue in Russia. So it's a conversation not many people are having, so I hope you'll stay with us as we dive into that. Okay, I've had some questions come in which are fascinating to me. So many people have questions about in-laws, and it's telling the challenges that many people experience. You take two families, you bring them together. I was raised this way. You were raised that way. You had religious perspectives, political, socioeconomic elements. You had simple things such as manners and climate, you name it, living in different states. So many things can come up, but I was actually fascinated by this particular question. I'm going to get to it in just a moment. But by the way, if you're just joining us, I'm going to discuss parents. Listen, today, it is so difficult as married spouses to protect your kids. I want to talk about why we need to make sacrifices to protect our kids. I'll make a little bit of a roundup of what's happening in the nation to understand why this is so important, why it's our primary role, and why it's at the heart of marriage. You're listening to Trending with Timory here on Relevant Radio. Okay, so Sandra reached out and she's asking for advice having to do with her mother-in-law. And so she said, "Hey Timory, I want to ask your advice on something that has been bothering me. Sometimes when my husband, my one-year-old son, and I go to my in-laws, my mother-in-law is dressed modestly, especially wearing a shirt without undergarments. This is something that's happened several times. My son is too young, of course, to notice something like this, but this is something we don't want to model and have him think our silence on this is okay when he grows up. She said, I'm not sure how exactly to act by leaving the house as soon as possible, or if I should tell her something. So I appreciate your help." Oh boy, you have a mother-in-law that's not wearing undergarments when you go to visit. This is one of those moments. How close to your in-laws are you? I digress. Okay, so I get this. I think the immodesty is one thing, but the lack of undergarments is another issue. And I think that it's something, if it's really bothering you with regard to the undergarments, absolutely can and should be addressed if that is a fundamental part for you guys of addressing the issue of modesty in your home with your child. But I think that approaching the topic of modesty overall with your mother-in-law might be a little more difficult. So my thoughts on this is I think it's important, and we're going to be talking about, you know, as parents protecting our kids, it's really important. But before we go there, I think this is kind of a really great launching point. Since it's your mother-in-law, I always recommend that the actual biological child approaches their parents about any issues. I think this is best. However, again, depending on the relationship, never be afraid to address things directly. But I would say, you know, for in this situation, if your husband is willing, it's his mom, saying something as simple as, hey, mom, you know, as Benny gets a little older, it's important that he learns about modesty. Can you please make sure to wear undergarments when we come over to the house? And just leave it at that. I don't think that you can necessarily bridge the topic of modesty and clothing as a whole. In my opinion, I think that's just really hard to approach your in-laws on that issue. And I think that that's something that can really be addressed in your home. You know, we're always going to be exposed to people who don't necessarily dress the way we'd agree. And it could provide a conversation for love and charity, that is, in the midst of the modesty conversation as your son gets older. But I think directly approaching the undergarment issue, that could be an issue. Honestly, that would just make me feel uncomfortable if my mother-in-law didn't wear undergarments a lot of the time when I went to visit. Even if it would be, I'm just saying, those are thoughts on my end. But I thought this was a great question, and it is one of those moments where how do we navigate these relationships? And as I always say, because I receive a lot of questions about in-laws on social media, you know, I'm trying to figure out these relationships too. They're not always easy. At times it's great. At moments, you know, you have two different ways of living and operating and moving, and you know, your spouse has a very deep relationship with their parents, you know, hopefully, and you have to honor and respect that. But I always come back to God's intention for marriage from the beginning, that we are leaving our parents and we become one as spouses. And so often we talk about the sexual union of the two shall become one flesh, but also it's this embodiment of understanding we're called to be of one mind, of one intention, of one conversation, that as spouses, we're on the same level. We can't force one another to be in agreement. We also can't force our extended families to be on the same page, but we can have conversations. And I think that what's important first and foremost is that you and your spouse are on the same page and you're figuring out, especially with just a one-year-old and, you know, still I imagine pretty much, very much so newlyweds, you're navigating how you guys will handle these situations together. And instead of kind of pointing out and trying to change everyone else, turning in and seeing how can we address this within our home is a really great starting point for whatever may come up. And I know for me, you know, being a marriage rookie here, it's only been a few years now. These are things that, you know, again, being on the same page with my spouse has been so important as we've navigated our own challenges. You're listening to Trending with Tim Murray here on Relevant Radio. So many questions coming in actually about Lent. Okay, I received a couple questions on Instagram about favorite books to read during Lent, favorite devotionals. 10 out of 10 recommend. If you have not read this and you have been like a regular listener of Trending for more than, let's say, a year, you need to read this book. It's called Preparation for Death by St. Alphonsus Liguori. They're actually short meditations you can do every single day. It's very turnkey. So that is something I recommend, 10 out of 10. By the way, I list a ton of resources on the podcast for Monday's show with resources for prayer, praying the Lorica of St. Patrick. We include a link to that, a link for praying the Liturgy of the Hours. Include a link to that as well. So those are some resources that I would highly recommend. Another question came in from Dragonfly MC about Lent. And the question was, can you use Lent to pray and fast for someone else's conversion? That's a great question. So Lent is all about prayer, fasting, and almsgiving. It's about repentance. And that's part of our understanding of Lent, that we are having this conversion of heart, mind, body, soul to God, that we're purging things out of our lives that are getting in the way of our relationship with God, and that we're preparing ourselves for the sacrifice of the cross, to enter into Christ's passion, but then to enter into the resurrection. A foretaste of it in terms of the celebration that we will go through at Easter, the largest, greatest liturgical event of the entire year is Easter, but also in anticipation of our resurrection, the significance of the resurrection in our life, of entering into heaven one day. And so all of that, yes, is about our conversion. It needs to be first and foremost about our conversion. But as we are making sacrifices, I think it's so important that we see in the midst of that, that those sacrifices can be offered up in reparation for our own sins. They can be offered up to specifically an intention for a family member, a friend, a child. It can be offered up for things, for example, yesterday. The Holy Father and the bishops called us to pray and fast specifically for peace between Ukraine and Russia and the world. And so these are things where we can offer up our prayers for other people and situations. You're listening to Trending with Timur here on Relevant Radio. So those are some great questions. I love it. More questions are coming in on social media. You can always ask your question now. It's our weekly marriage hour on Trending. In just a little bit, I'm going to talk about why Mary is the model for all spouses. And even if you're not a spouse, you can totally learn from the Blessed Virgin Mary and her model. We're going to walk through part of the Litany of Loretto because I think it's so relevant for marriage, but for all of us, of embodying some of the virtues of the Blessed Virgin Mary. So it's our marriage hour, and as we know, as Catholics, when we go before the priest, when we vow to one another to be faithful, to be true, when we vow to one another in richer or poor, all of these circumstances that can arise, then when we vow our lives and we give ourselves to our spouse in marriage, some of what we talk about and understand as Catholics marrying the sacrament of marriage, that marriage is oriented toward children. It's for the good of the spouses and for the procreation and education of children. That is having kids and educating them. And so this is what sacramental marriage is all about. And that educating them means educating the whole person. It doesn't mean saying, hey, I signed my kid up for school. Okay, great. You know, I'm going to slap my hands off, you know, wipe my hands off. It's done. You know, my check mark for education, you know, may even pay for their college if that's something I can afford. Great. I educated them. That's my responsibility. Well, actually, your responsibility as a parent is to educate the whole person, not just to help them get a degree in math, not just to help them to read, but to make them a well-rounded person who knows, loves, and serves God, who can discern and know truth from falsehood, who has developed and embodied the virtues. This is what we're called to. But here's the challenge, Shane. I want to talk about what we can do as Catholic parents and what we must sacrifice. You see, let's kind of do a mini rundown of what's happening in the nation right now, because there's a crisis brewing, and that is our current culture is challenging for kids to survive. We are seeing off the chart numbers of anxiety and depression, suicidality for young kids. Kids who grew up in Catholic or pro-life homes who suddenly are pro-abortion, radical feminists, anti-marriage, who aren't getting married, you know, are moving in with the people they're dating. So what this shows is that we need to protect our kids. And so let's do a little rundown of what's happening. Something that hit me close to home. I grew up in a small mountain community in the Southern California mountains in San Bernardino County. I grew up in Lake Arrowhead and Running Springs. Well, between Lake Arrowhead and Running Springs, there's a camp called Camp Pali. And just over the last couple of weeks, news has come out that a couple of moms have blown the whistle, one of which being Susie Johnson. She was actually interviewed on Fox and Friends First. And here's the deal. Her kid, her 11-year-old daughter, along with her other fifth grade girls, bunked at this camp, in this cabin at Camp Pali, right where I grew up, with a biological male in their room. An adult male was bunking
with 11-year-old girls. Not only was this an adult male, but it was also an adult male who was confused about his sexuality. Now, none of this would have come up because, in fact, the mom wasn't informed ahead of time that a biological male would be bunking with her kid and the other kids at the science camp. Actually, the reason it came up was because her daughter, along with a couple other daughters, experienced a little bit of abuse by some of the female camp counselors. Things such as pulling their hair, being abusive with, how she interacted with them. Not extremely violent, but she was rough, very rough with these little girls, these 11-year-old kids. My concern is if multiple of the camp counselors were rough with little girls, well, did they have their best interest in mind when a biological male who was confused about his sexuality was bunking with these little girls? And this is a major red flag, and I bring this up because, one, it's sexually unsafe, especially within the LGBTQ community. There's a tremendous amount of sexual exploration, of sexual grooming. So this is dangerous for kids, and it's dangerous for, what if a child in there had been sexually abused before? How uncomfortable that kid could have been because there's a biological male unsafely sleeping in the same area. And what about getting dressed in front of one another? And there are so many things that can go wrong. Everyone knows that people are loose, in camps and locker rooms. Well, this is private bunking areas for girls. And number two, this should have been disclosed to parents beforehand if this was going to occur. And I think that these are really important things for us to remember. And as I mentioned before, third, this provides opportunity for abuse given that the other counselors were rough on these kids. They clearly didn't care about their well-being, and they were putting these kids in jeopardy. Here it is. So the science camp itself has made it clear when approached after the fact by multiple moms about this issue. The science camp said that they're okay with people based on identifying with so-called gender, not biological sex, sleeping in the arrangements according to how they identify, not what they biologically are. This is ridiculous. So you're playing politics on the backs of children and not telling their parents. So that's a science camp. One of the camp counselors said that there were actually multiple people there at the camp who were involved in running the camp who identified as they, them. In other words, as a transgender identity. Sounds like there's something wishy-washy going on. If a number of people, multiple people, from camp counselors to organizers, had transgender identities, something's up. Why do they have a bunch of 11-year-old kids and fifth grade girls bunking with men? What is this? This is inappropriate. I'm sorry, but parents, you should know ahead of time. And yes, things happen. We don't find out till later. But this is the example of why I want to talk about this during today's Marriage Hour. We as Catholic parents must sacrifice, I think, more than ever before. We have to be so aware of what's going on. This is a reminder that we cannot trust anyone else with our kids. And we'll talk about that a little bit in just a moment. But let's go on a little bit more. So then what else? Well, one person appealed in this situation. I can't remember if it was the camp or one of the counselors, appealed to California law. They said, well, according to California law, all of this was legal. So in the state of California, along with other states, it's totally okay if a biological male sleeps in the room with 11-year-old girls and you as a parent don't know. Okay, so stay with me here. So then Camp Pally in Running Springs, California, again, right around where I grew up, Running Springs and Lake Arrowhead. I drove past this place almost every day growing up. Well, Camp Pally actually lawyered up, and they had their lawyer release a statement. And basically the lawyer, because they know they're in trouble, they have 11-year-old girls who the science camp that came in and hosted a camp at their location had men sleeping with girls. So now Camp Pally, the location itself, lawyers up and says they have no knowledge. And then they go on and try to blame a kid. They try to blame an innocent little kid, 11-year-old kid. Maybe the kid misunderstood because there were a number of people at the camp who identified with they, them, their identities, you know, gender neutral pronouns. And, you know, by the way, it doesn't just take someone who's, and I'm using my words here, it doesn't just take a transgender individual, a person who identifies as the opposite sex, to refer to themselves as they, them. What they try to make the claim is that sometimes biological females essentially can choose to refer to themselves as they, them as well. So they're trying to make it sound as if, well, the kid doesn't know what the kid's talking about. And this is where we run into a problem as a culture, because now people are saying, well, what do you want to do? Do you want to do a check between the legs to verify? Well, if it has to do with keeping my child safe, if that is what is necessary to prove biological sex, maybe based on a birth certificate or a driver's license that isn't allowed to be altered because of political rules. I just got a new driver's license. I moved to the Midwest, finally converted to new driver's license, even though I really love my California ID. Don't get me wrong, I love California. I wish we could go back, God willing, one day. But here's the deal. When I was going through my whole driver's license swap over, one of the options was, oh, you know, are you needing to change the records for a new biological sex or name change, etc., to change your gender? How is it that we are allowing legal documents, medical documents, to have something other than our biological sex? This is a lie about what it means to be male and what it means to be female. This is a lie. What if a biological male who goes through a sex change to pretend to be he's a female goes to receive some sort of emergency medical treatment? His driver's license says that he's a female. He even has some parts that look like a female, but he's actually not a female internally. This can impact everything from the type of medication that is used, the dosage that's used, and how they try to fix his anatomy, because it's already been altered to be something that he is not. And so I give this example because here's where the Catholic Church comes in. The Catholic Church and the teachings of the Catholic Church, going all the way back to our Judeo-Christian roots, all the way back to the dawn of creation, read sacred scripture, look at Genesis. God created us a male and female. Now, some people may try to say that, well, I'm Catholic and I live out this. But you have to follow what the church teaches. And the Catholic Church upholds truth. Some individuals, some leaders may fail to do that, but what the church teaches is true. We are made male and female. We complement one another as male and female, like a key and a lock, like a hose pump going into the car, like a buckle that you can't fly safely. You can't even take off on an airplane if your buckle is not properly buckled. Do you get what I'm saying? In order for us to function properly as a society, in order for us to fly on a plane, in order for our car to be filled up with gas, we have to function a particular way. The Creator had an intention for us. We are beloved and true and intentionally made by God, our Creator, and we must uphold this. And so this is, as parents, this is one of those things where we have to protect our kids. And I'm going to come back here on the show and I'm going to tell you a couple other things that are happening in this nation to understand how important it is that we're willing to debunk what's happening, protect our kids, and fight for them. And this is the new challenge for married people. It's exhausting. It's challenging, but this is what true love is when it comes to our kids. You're listening to Trending with Timory. It's our marriage hour. We're going to talk about how Mary is a model for all spouses. We're taking more questions, especially having to do with Lent, and we'll talk about the State of the Union and President Joe Biden. This hour is sponsored by Solidarity HealthShare. Join thousands of members who choose life through ethical and affordable health care. Check now to see how much you can save. Go to CatholicHealthShare.com.
We're talking about what you're thinking about. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Okay, so we're going to come to the State of the Union address and how President Biden was actually approached by a Catholic reporter from EWTN this week about his stance on abortion. And his response is absolutely unacceptable in any arena when it comes to the abortion debate. He basically makes no argument and appeals to an argument that for some reason some people will actually listen to, but is totally inappropriate. to even be a part of the Catholic, or should I say the main debate on abortion. So we'll talk about that in just a moment. I am taking your questions. It's our weekly marriage hour here on Trending, 1-888-914-9149. So here's the deal. We're talking about how, as parents, there's a lot we have to sacrifice today in the culture we're living in. And I've been giving you a rundown of what's going on. I just want to give you a couple more examples of what's happening on the front of kids and protecting our kids. And we'll talk about this one in particular more tomorrow. There's been a multi-state investigation launched into TikTok, you know, the platform, social media that provides short little videos. A lot of them have people doing a little shimmy and a dance and pointing at text. Some are just people dancing. Others are funny. Others are educational. Well, TikTok, that to some might seem harmless, has been the focus of investigation launched by 8 states. And by the way, the leading state is the state of California. In other words, what's happening is that people are seeing that the use of social media, in particular TikTok, is endangering the mental health of children today. Not just the mental health, but also physically. Now, I spoke earlier this week with Charlie Jacobs, who talked about how she had to help save her child, her 13-year-old child, from a transgender identity. How was she ushered into the identity? Well, she was ushered into the identity specifically through use of social media. So here's the deal. Some governors are fighting to protect kids. For example, in the state of Texas, Greg Abbott has actually launched an investigation into parents who have children who have been allowed to sexually transition. That is, to go through sex changes, surgery, irreversible surgery, permanent damaging surgery, to receive puberty-blocking drugs, that essentially the Texas governor has essentially launched and encouraged investigations into parents who have gone along with this political agenda of scientific experimentation and ideological experimentation on children. That's a good thing. He's saying this is child abuse, and it needs to be considered what's going on behind the scenes in that home. Well, President Biden and the head of Health and Human Services, Xavier Becerra, who we know quite a bit about in California, he has engaged in a manhunt against David Lyden, the pro-life activist and hero who exposed the baby body exploitation and selling and buying and selling and experimentation of babies. Well, Health and Human Services, Xavier Becerra, and Biden are condemning this possible intervention, or this intervention by a Texas governor into these families. And he's also saying that he may even intervene if this continues. So in the name of the LGBTQ ideology, President Biden and Health and Human Services Becerra is actually, they're both saying that, well, one, we condemn this, but two, we will actually intervene. We will intervene and stop this. What they're saying is that we will continue to allow the cover-up of children who are being sexually mutilated, chemically altered, and having puberty blocked, that we'll go through with that. You see, here's the deal. I think what's happening in Texas with Governor Greg Abbott is actually a really good example of where law should go. Law should support and aid the truth of the human person, the truth of human function in society. It should support parents. And in this case, it is supporting parents in their mission by saying, hey, is something going on here that shouldn't be happening to children? And, you know, it's ridiculous because this current administration, the Department of Justice, it's out of control. News came out from a memo back in September of 2021. If you're a parent, you should care about this. That a controversial school board memo went out between the National School Board Association and the Biden administration, agreeing essentially to label parents who are concerned about what their children are learning, how they're being politicized, how the truth about their kids is being hidden from them. Just ask Charlie Jacobs, who was with me on Trending, sharing her own story about what happened in the school system, actually both private and public. And they were being labeled by the Biden administration as well as the National School Board. There was collusion between the two to label parents who care about their kids as domestic terrorists. The Justice Department was asking for a pledge to protect school board members. You know, Lucas, can you include a link? Last week, maybe 2 weeks ago on the show, I shared the testimony of a father who went before a school board meeting and he defended protecting his kids. And it was such a profound moment because the dad was there saying, hey, what's happening in these schools isn't okay. And one of the things he says, and we'll include a link in the podcast notes because it's a really important conversation. If you're a parent, you need to hear this. One of the things he says is it's not okay for boys to play with girls. He says, I have boys. I don't allow my boys to rough up my daughter. Why on earth would I allow and want other boys to rough up my daughter in female sports? You see, parents are being silenced. This father, who is peacefully using his voice to call out the school board, well, they bring in police officers into the back of the room, and the police officers come to the front of the room, and the police officer is standing on the side, trying to silence and bully. This is what school boards and the Biden administration have been involved in. And so this is a moment more than ever before as parents, our marriages are being challenged because we have to have such a high level of involvement and accountability. We are being reminded that we are to answer the call of the Catholic Church as a married spouse is receiving the sacrament of matrimony to be the primary educators of our children. Of the whole person, not just helping them to get a degree, not just paying for school, not just moving to the right school district, not just making sure they get good enough or passing grades. No, we need to take back the education of our children. We need to take back and spend more time with our kids and spend time with the people who spend time with our kids, from teachers to coaches to friends to parents of other friends. Parents, you can't trust anyone. We even have to be careful within the midst of the sexual crisis we're seeing today, with the rise of pornography, even within our own families. We have to verify, we have to continue to keep accountable, but ultimately we have to take back responsibility for our children. I'm hearing from you in droves across the nation. Your kids are suffering, and the thing that is saving them is intense, intentional involvement and time in their lives. You are saving your children from the brink of suicide. You are saving your children from depression and anxiety. You must fight. That, and what this all comes back to is that means we have to make sacrifices as parents. Bishop Olmsted released a document, an apostolic document, a couple years ago titled Complete My Joy. And it was a document specifically to Christian spouses, talking about our roles as husbands and wives, but also talking about our roles as parents. And one of the things he brings up there is the importance of one parent, in particular the mother, because there's a lot of science backing this, being home to raise the child, being there before and after school, being there for pickups and drop-offs. And don't get me wrong, I understand. Maybe you're hearing this and maybe you feel judged, or maybe you feel like, I can't do that. Or maybe you feel like you are so exhausted, you're trying to spin the wheel and do everything you can. But I want to invite you into the invitation that Bishop Olmsted invites us into as spouses, to make sacrifices, to do what we have to do, to live more simply so that we can be with our kids, so that we can be with the people our kids are around. You are your child's best advocate. You are the person who should have your child's best interest in mind and know your child better than everyone else, without even being told to sense and notice when something's going on with your child. It's our duty as parents. It's an act of charity. And I want to encourage and challenge you this Lent. Maybe think and ponder how you can step into that role more confidently. How can you step into that role and make some sacrifices? Bishop Olmsted invites us to try and drop down to a single income, to maybe change the hours we are working so that we can be present with our children. And someone might say, well, hey, Tumori, here you are. You have, you know, a national radio show. You're on the show every day. You know, are you with your child? It's a great question. I've said this multiple times, and I'll say it again. If at any point this radio program gets in the way of me being a mom and a wife, I have to stop. I will not be able to continue to do this every day. And I hope and pray, I do know that God has called me at this time in my life to be here with you. But, you know, I do this show after my daughter goes to sleep. Grant, she's teething, and so she is having a tough half an hour. I think she just barely fell asleep. My husband's been holding her for the last half hour. And, you know, it's one thing for us to be out of our kids' lives for moments and times, but we need to be around our kids. You know, I work really hard to get my work done when my kid's sleeping, or we work side by side because she's awake a little more than she was before. And maybe she's typing on the computer while I do, you know, 10 minutes here and 10 minutes there. You know, it's important that we're with our kids. We're raising our kids. Sure, not everyone can work from home, but what we all can do is make some sacrifice. I'll never forget Brooke Taylor, who's filled in for me on Trending here. Incredible human being. And she's always talked about how they've really fought for her to be present with her kids. And she talks about how when she was growing up, she remembers her mom was always present. Her mom raised the kids and didn't work. And she remembers the little sacrifices her parents made. And I remember just one of them that was so simple. And it's a huge reminder and almost slap in the face for me to remember. So my mom had one nice dress. That one nice dress was a nice dress that she wore when she went out to dinner with my dad. That one nice dress was the dress she wore to Sunday Mass. That one nice dress was the dress she wore when she'd go to various events. That one nice dress represented the sacrifice that she made to be with her children. And I think about how many pieces of clothing are in my own closet. How many pieces of clothing that, you know, one, other people could use, but two, that I spent more money than I needed to. I think that these are reminders that there are little ways in life that we must work on being more simple. And we don't have to have the brand new car. We don't have to have the large house. Sometimes we can go on a camping vacation in the backyard or go somewhere to visit with family. But these are things that we can do and change and work and strive to implement into our lives so that it's not always about the bottom line forcing us to not be as present as we could be with our kids. Where can we sacrifice to be more present aware, to keep others accountable, to verify who's with our kids, and take back that responsibility as Christian spouses that we're called to? Because I see kids thriving and I see kids struggling, and the kids whose parents are with them and spending tons of time with them, it makes a world of difference. Your kid doesn't need the best education. Your kid doesn't need all of the video games. Your kid does not need the cell phone. Your kid does not need the best clothes. Hey, I love thrift shopping. You'd be surprised what you can find. What your kid needs is you. And that's what the church teaches. And that's what we have to remember as the ways of the world distract us. That's what we have to remember as we read shocking story after shocking story of what's happening in this nation, that kids' lives matter and that parents matter and that you can make the difference. We want to see the world change. Start within our home. Start with these young, incredible, formable human beings who will go out and change the world. And you know, someone who reminds me and inspires me with this is St. Catherine Drexel. If you know nothing of her story, she's an American saint. And St. Catherine Drexel came from a very rich family. Father was a banker. She traveled on the railroads in her own car, traveled the world. But at the same time as her family was rich, she had this incredible coming out. She was well known in society, traveled the world, which was something done only by elitists at the time. She saw her father every evening praying for 30 minutes. She saw her mother opening their home multiple days of the week to the poor. And as she was traveling the world, she had the opportunity on behalf of a bishop in the United States to approach Pope Leo XIII and ask him to send missionaries and more help to the United States for a crisis that was going on at her time, at her point in history. And you know what Pope Leo encouraged her to do? He encouraged her to fix the problem. His response was essentially, what are you going to do? Why don't you become a missionary? Instead of trying to accomplish all of these things in our career, instead of trying to accomplish all of these things in an academic level, instead of trying to accomplish, you know, this financial status, what are we going to do within our homes? What are we going to do to change the culture and the world we live in? You don't necessarily have to get involved in politics. You don't necessarily have to volunteer at every single thing. But what you do have to do is see how important kids are and how we can get involved in our in their lives. St. Catherine Drexel is a saint because she had the witness of her parents. See what one parent, two parents' witnesses can do to change a life. And ultimately usher our children into the kingdom of heaven. You're listening to Trending with Timory. I'll be back to talk about Mary, the model of spouses, and the State of the Union address, and President Biden's comments on abortion.
Today's show is sponsored by Colby Academy. With more than 40 years of experience in Catholic home education, Colby Academy offers a blend of classical Catholic curriculum and the latest educational technology. More info at relevantradio.com/Colby.
Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
A brief comment on today's Lenten lesson on the Mass. If you joined us for the Lenten Lessons on the Mass with Father Rocky, please, I hope you will sign up at relevantradio.com. Today's Lenten lesson has to do with genuflecting and this idea of genuflecting as we enter into a church, as we kneel, as we come in and out of the pew. You know, sometimes if you've ever been to a Catholic event and it's not inside a church, you ever almost genuflect? Well, I almost did this the other day. I wasn't even in the church, but it was a Catholic event with a Catholic speaker. And I like started to lean forward. Whoa, hold on. Where am I? We genuflect before the presence of God. We also might genuflect at home when we're acknowledging God's presence. But one of the things I was really thinking about, how important it is. We read in Philippians, St. Paul's words, that the name of Jesus, every knee must bend. Genuflecting for me is a reminder of two things. When we go into the church, it's a reminder of the presence of our Lord Jesus Christ, of the visible presence, the physical presence there. But then also when we genuflect, it is an act of humility, saying, Lord, I love you. My whole life depends upon you. You created me. So I hope you'll follow these Lenten lessons. Today, again, was on genuflecting. Stay tuned for tomorrow's Lenten lesson on the Mass. If you haven't already signed up, sign up at relevantradio.com. You're listening to Trending with Timory. Let's talk about how the Blessed Virgin Mary is the model for all spouses. Our Lady is a model for everyone, male and female. Husband or wife, and even if you're not married, we can learn from Our Lady and her virtues. And I was praying with the Litany of Loretto, which is the Litany of the Blessed Virgin Mary. And we have all these titles for Mary where we ask her to pray for us, such as Mother Most Amiable, pray for us. Virgin Most Prudent, pray for us. We talk about her being Queen of Heaven. And I want to narrow in on a couple of these titles that Our Lady holds. Mother Most Amiable, I believe, is an example for us to ponder of what we, I know, want in our spouse, but what we should also be to our spouse. What does it mean to be amiable? Agreeable, affable, willing, friendly. It also allows other people to be and to have opinions. I hope and I pray for Our Lady's intercession for that virtue, that demeanor of being amiable. Another one of the titles she goes by is Virgin Most Prudent. Prudence is one of the four cardinal virtues, the virtues, the doorposts of all virtues, which our whole moral life, our ethical life rests upon, the development of our character. It's known as the chariot of the virtues. St. Thomas Aquinas, following Aristotle, actually refers to prudence as a right reason in action. I've actually done a whole series on prudence. Lucas, let's go ahead and link to the prudence series. If you're looking to grow this Lent, that's an incredible opportunity to grow. We'll post a link to that on social media as well as in the podcast notes for today's show. I have a whole episode series I did on prudence, on temperance, on justice and fortitude, the four cardinal virtues. So prudence If we look at Our Lady as Mary Most Prudent, this is something that we want to see in our spouse and that we should personify. To be prudent as a spouse is to be someone who acts reasonably. The Catechism of the Catholic Church in paragraph 1806 says, the virtue that disposes practical reason to discern our true good in every circumstance and to choose the right means of achieving it. So what does prudence have to do? It has to do with discerning the good in every circumstance and to choose that good. So to discern and choose it. So to act rightly and reasonably. This is why it's such an important virtue. And it's one which I believe we must turn to Our Lady and her example to model before our spouse, and even if you're not married. Another one of those titles that Our Lady goes by is Virgin Most Merciful. I'm so grateful my husband is a very merciful spouse, and I hope yours is too, but we can first start by modeling this. What does it mean to be merciful? To be compassionate, to be forgiving. I hope this is something our spouse can have confidence in seeing from us, that we can have confidence in our spouse and they in us, in the gentle forgiveness that will always be shown. That we don't harbor resentment, or that when our spouse acts and acts wrongly or makes mistakes, that they don't have this attitude of feeling that, the man, I'm going to pay for this. No, that they know that we are merciful like Our Lady is merciful, who models Jesus Christ's mercy. So I hope you'll pray the Litany of Loretto and meditate upon Our Lady's virtues and see how she is a true model of spouses. She embodies what it means to be a spouse. You're listening to Trending with Tim Ray here on Relevant Radio. Okay, I've been wanting to talk about this for the last couple of days. The State of the Union Address by President Biden. Okay, absolutely unacceptable. He yet again affirms absolute support for abortion and abortion on demand. He was in favor of the so-called Women's Health Protection Act, which thank God failed in the Senate, but it was pushing for abortion on demand, no limitations. And he said in his State of the Union address, the constitutional right affirmed in Roe v. Wade is a standing precedent for half a century, is under attack as never before. He goes on to say, if we want to go forward, not backward, we must protect access to health care, preserve a woman's right to choose. Abortion is not health care. If you want to support a right to choose, support the right to choose of a child. And by the way, I've stood in front of that abortion clinic. Most women who choose abortion are forced into that choice and believe they have no other option. And the abortion clinic workers pressure women to have abortion. And yes, abortion should be under attack because it's an atrocious killing of an innocent child. Now, what's interesting is that just this Wednesday, a Catholic reporter from EWTN approached President Biden in a press conference and asked him about abortion. He said, as a Catholic, why do you support abortion? Do you want to know what President Biden actually said? He said two things. One, I don't want to get in a debate with you on theology. And two, I'm not going to make a judgment for other people. I could not believe he said this. Number one, abortion, and take note of this as a person of faith, we should never lead our abortion argument with theology because it's very simple. Yes, thou shalt not kill, but that's common reason. We shouldn't kill a baby. This is a lie about abortion that President Biden is trying to push for, that it's a theological debate. And by the way, theology isn't up for debate here in general. We know what the church teaches, and he should too, being a lifelong Catholic. What he's saying is a lie about the person. An innocent, dependent baby. He's lying and saying that we should kill a baby, and he's trying to use not wanting to get into a theological debate to defend his position of just getting around it. Two, abortion hurts a woman, a mother, and her future. Talk about post-abortion syndrome and the lifelong wound of abortion. It's a lie to say that this is just a theological debate and that he's not going to engage in a theological debate. And it's a lie about the whole family, the family unit, and the impact of abortion on society. It does not need to be reduced to a theological argument. It's simple. killing babies destroys a life. It destroys the life of the mother and her future, and it destroys families in this nation. And he makes comments about going backward if we lose abortion access. No, we have gone backward by allowing for barbaric practices of destroying human life, such as human sacrifices that occurred years prior in the Roman kingdom and other times. Here's the reality. The Catholic Church upholds the value of the human person, and I do believe we will see Roe versus Wade overturned this June, and we will fight state to state for an end to abortion in our state. So I hope you will join us, pray fast this Lent for an end to abortion, and do not give up whatever the outcome, because life matters. Eight states, led by California, launched a probe into the social media platform TikTok regarding its catastrophic effects on kids' health. This is Tim Ray from Trending with Tim Ray. Take back your kids from the digital world. Melanie Hempy from ScreenStrong.com joins me Friday to give a how-to guide on how to protect your kids digitally. I'll also discuss overcoming vanity. Join me Friday at 6 p.m. Central on Relevant Radio or the Relevant Radio app.